Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, Scott. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you, Ben.
I have had, yet again, you know, I'm a little bit impulsive, right?
Yeah, I know that.
Okay, well, you know, we're still friends nonetheless. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be kind of cool to live in my car. I know we did a podcast about this earlier, and please don't think I'm rehashing the same material, because what I was hoping we could talk about today...
Wait. What? Is this a van down by the river?
This is not, well... Not anymore that you brought it up in a way that sounds...
I could see you maybe wanting to live in a van down by the river, but... No, okay, go ahead. Sorry, didn't mean to...
Van down by the river.
Well, yeah, you know, the
God
bit.
Bless Chris Farley.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I miss him.
I you know, I do want a van, and I love rivers, but before I go to that step, let's plan B, that one. Let's consider that plan B.
Okay.
Because right now, plan A for me is RVs.
Oh,
first question, do you know what that stands for?
I do, and that's a much better idea than, you know, the van idea. An RV is a recreational vehicle, and there's a lot of different types of these things. We can talk about a few of those today if you want to. You know, there's everything from the bus style all the way down to the little tiny kind that you pull behind your car.
The fifth wheel kind.
Yeah, even smaller than that. A lot smaller than that. So there's a ton of different variety, you know, a lot of variety, I should say. And... well, where do you want to start?
Okay. All right. This sounds like we can dig into this. Let's start with defining an RV. What makes an RV? What's the difference between an RV and a car?
Okay. Well, easy enough, I guess. If you're talking about the big RVs that you drive.
Yeah.
Okay. That's where it gets a little confusing. There's about seven different classes here. So
okay.
If you want to talk about the ones that you drive, most people are familiar with this. They look like a bus usually.
Mm-hmm.
They're great big, of course, on wheels. they have sleeping facilities. They have their own electricity. They hook up to electricity. They have their own water. They have their own, you know, restrooms. They have
kitchens,
large screen TVs. They have everything. They're the big ones. You can take this all the way down to little pop up campers that, you know, you pull behind a truck or something like that, or maybe even a car. It depends on what kind of car it is, but there's everything in between as well. And you know, it just depends on how much you're willing to spend, how much you're going to use it, I guess, and if this is going to replace your home, really, because I think for some people, it replaces their home.
Oh, yeah. The practice I've heard is called snowbirding by some people. It's people who are camping enthusiasts or want to travel around rather than live in one place, actually live in an RV.
So. Makes sense. They're moving to suit the weather to suit them, I guess. Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I understand. Seems like a good idea, I guess. If you get to a certain age, retirement age maybe, you know, you don't want that house up in, I don't know, Massachusetts or something where you're going to get a ton of snow.
Or Naples, Florida.
Yeah, or Naples, Florida, and it gets too hot in the summertime. You may want to, you know, head north for the wintertime for months at a time, and it may just be more economical to take everything with you.
Sure. Birds do it.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I don't think they take everything with them on that point.
No, I don't. Well, I don't know, maybe.
Who knows?
What a bird's own.
You know, I'm not an ornithologist, nor am I an economist,
so I
couldn't say for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I don't even know what the seven types of RVs are.
Okay, well, I have a list.
I love a list.
We can talk about them as we go. I'll keep it short, but let's see. Let me just make sure there's seven. I think there's six, maybe, now that I look at it. But we'll get into it, okay? Class A, which is the big one, the big daddy. There's gas or diesel, and these are the bus style, you know, the RV.
Okay.
Of RV. Huge. They're built on a specialty chassis, so they're not any other vehicle that's converted into an RV. They're born as an RV. They are from the manufacturer, from the factory, an RV. They're never anything but that. And these are the giant ones that you see. And these things, I'll tell you, they have all the amenities that you'd have at your house, and then more in most cases. A lot of times, you know, people have RVs that are better equipped than their homes because they have so many features. They're so advanced. They're so, I guess, well constructed and so well thought out that, you know, everything is there. Flat screen TVs, you know, sleeping quarters, the kitchen area. I'm sure it might not be as large, you know, spacious as your home may be, but it may be more plush.
It's an apartment on wheels.
It really is, yeah. For some people, if you had an apartment, this would be even bigger.
Yeah, I could see that because, you know, a lot of people, when people, at least in the States, live in a house, a lot of times it's an older house. So even if it's bigger than the RV they may own, if it's a Class A, the Class A probably has more amenities.
Yeah, it could be, yeah. Yeah, I think in many cases that's true. The next one is Class B, of course. And really, this is a van conversion, which you've probably seen these before. It's like a van that has like a kind of like a bubble on top, really. It's nothing more than just a big van with a little extra space on top for maybe a bunk.
Yes.
Or, you know, that you can stand up inside the van.
I've seen that.
It's pretty simple, really, but Class B is much smaller than Class A. And again, that's a van that's been converted into something like this.
Okay.
Class C, that is a van or a truck cab with a body that's built by an RV manufacturer. Now, that's a little more rare. I don't know if you could say more rare or not, I guess, because we're right near I-75 here.
Sure.
And I see a lot of traffic, RV traffic going up and down I-75. So we happen to see a lot of RVs. This type, I think it's pretty common on that highway, really. I mean, to see that. This isn't the giant bus type. It's something in between. It's not the van conversion that we just talked about. This is one where it's kind of seamlessly built into the van or truck that it was I guess the donor vehicle, really.
I see.
So it there is a donor vehicle involved. It is a truck or a van. However, it's got a much larger RV body built on it by the manufacturer.
Okay.
So a lot of space in that one. There's a lot more room in a Class C, which is, you know, this add-on type thing, versus the Class B, which is really just the van with the extra little space on top.
Right. Okay.
Okay. I'm getting near the end here. Don't worry.
Oh, no. I'm in my head, I'm imagining living in each one of these.
Okay. So that's good. That's, I guess, good to do. Pop-up trailer. That's the next one I've got here on my list. This is the kind that you'll see towed behind a truck or a van, and typically these are maybe 3 or 4 feet high at the most.
Sure.
And these fold out. You see them, they actually get quite large when they expand, and they often have soft panels on the side. So it, you know, it expands up and then out in all directions, and well, front and back usually.
Mm-hmm.
Decent size, you know, camper, enough room for, you know, 3 or 4 people. Not as nice as, you know, maybe like a big purpose built, you know, there all the time RV, but
sure.
The pop-up camper is good for a lot of families, and it stores well. It's really small. You can put it in your garage, park it next to your garage, and throw a tarp over it, whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it tows a lot better than, you know, some of the bigger camper,
flat
front end type things. Again, they're not very big, so it's nice. Good option.
Yeah.
Next one, truck camper. And this is one that you've probably seen before. It's a camper that sits right in the bed of a truck.
Yes, I've seen those. I was waiting to get to this because I actually have a specific question about these.
Mm-hmm.
You know that the protrusion that comes out over the cab of the truck?
Yes, I do.
Are there beds in there, or is that just storage?
You know, I think it depends on the manufacturer, but okay. I think that oftentimes there'll be a bunk up there that, you know, lays sideways across that way.
Okay.
I know that I've seen people laying with their, you know, head out that way if there's a window up there.
Mm-hmm.
Usually there is, and, you know, kind of looking out. That's kind of a cool view, I bet.
Yeah.
Not necessarily safe, but
no.
I bet it's pretty interesting to look at.
Well, when I used to own a pickup truck, and it was a smaller one, and I really, for a while, I thought about getting one of those.
Just, on a small pickup?
I know. That's why I said for a while, because it turns out I don't think there was one that fit. I had a little Chevy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like two seats, you know. And
was sure, like an S10 or something like that, whatever the model was at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. There may be, campers that fit that. I'm just not sure.
Yeah. I'm surely there is somewhere. But anyway,
yeah,
I digress.
We can look into that later. Okay, last one is a fifth wheel. Fifth wheel. Now, this one, probably the easiest way to describe this is, have you ever seen a semi-trailer with no trailer?
Yes.
Okay, so it's just, you know, the cab and then that kind of that flat area in the back. The connection point for a semi-trailer is usually like a fifth wheel hitch trailer would be for a pickup truck, for an RV or for a camper.
Okay.
It has kind of a horseshoe shape, and the mating part of that would be a kingpin that slides into that horseshoe shape, and then there's like a grease or a lubricant that's used on that horseshoe to allow it to pivot. And what that does is it gives it pretty good maneuverability.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, you have a truck or a camper, or rather, a truck or a van that has a hookup for a fifth wheel, Usually they can maneuver that thing pretty good because it just seems a little more easy to maneuver than something that's attached to the rear bumper of your vehicle.
Is that the same hookup that's used for, have you seen those trailers that carry horses?
Yes.
Like livestock? Is it the same kind of hookup?
Yeah, usually you'll find, because they can carry a lot of weight, because the weight,
okay.
The kingpin is placed, I think it's either just in front of or right over the rear axle, and that allows it to carry a lot more weight than if it's on the bumper, which is, you know, way behind the rear axle.
Yeah.
For weight concerns, you know, if you're carrying a lot of horses and they're huge trailers, usually those horse trailers, that's the kind of connection you're looking at. And also, the RVs that are fifth wheel RVs are really big. You'll find that, you know, they're not real short RVs. There wouldn't be
right.
much purpose in that. These are almost, you know, like a full size, like nearly the van size mm-hmm. that we're talking about, or rather the bus size, nearly. Maybe not as tall, but they're definitely a long RV.
Really, I guess I could see that because, you know, are you familiar with the movie Snatch?
No, I'm not.
There's this movie by this guy named Guy Ritchie. It's a English gangster movie, and it mm-hmm. deals with these. Some of the characters in this film are called travelers, or I believe Irish travelers, and they are a group of people in England who live in what's called caravans, or the equivalent of, you know, trailers, similar to RVs, because it sounds like they have the same fifth wheel connection point, and they're pulled behind trucks, and those things are pretty large. I mean, the people live in those.
Yeah, they're big. If it sounds like you're talking about the exact same thing that I'm talking about.
Yes.
And yeah, I think it's definitely possible to live in a fifth wheel. In fact, I know for sure it is. When I had a neighbor when I lived in Michigan who sold his home, bought a huge setup, like a rig. I guess he had done this prior to living in Michigan as well.
Uh-huh.
He was retired, bought a giant truck, bought a huge fifth wheel camper, and as far as I know, he's still out on the road somewhere, and this was years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Would you ever want to, usually save that till the end, would you ever want to drive around in the snowbird lifestyle?
I absolutely would not.
Yeah?
I enjoy being on the road. I really like that, and I like traveling, but for me, I've always had trouble with the trailer. Now, if you're talking like a big bus type,
yeah.
that might be a little different. But maneuvering a trailer and just the hassle of having to uncouple everything all the time and find a place to park that and being able to pull through a certain spot or being able to go to the gas station,
sure,
where it gets awful crowded sometimes on the highway. For me, far too much frustration. When I moved down here, I had a huge truck. With a trailer with my car, and that was a nightmare.
I imagine.
A nightmare. I almost, we'll talk about that later.
Is that for another day?
I guess so. I got stuck at a restaurant, and, well, anyways, never mind.
Okay, for our listeners, yeah. We should say that Scott's getting a bit of a dark look on his face.
Yeah, so. It wasn't a good day.
Okay, we'll go past that
yeah.
one.
Yep.
So those are the classes of trailers. I'm thinking maybe we could do it this way. Tell me how you feel about this. Maybe we can talk a little bit, just touch on the history of RVs in the U.S., and then maybe we can talk about some of the pros and cons of owning an RV.
Sure. Do you hip to the history of RVs?
I've got just a little bit. I've got just a bit.
Well, good, because that's a little bit more than I have, so so have at it.
Well, let's just touch on it broadly. One of, at least in the States, and this might not apply in other places where RVs are common, one of the names we usually associate with RVs is the Winnebago.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Going back to Winnebago
sure.
van.
I remember that one.
And as we know, that was founded in 1958 by a fellow named John Hansen in Iowa. And this has this company has continued to earn a name, and they're pretty iconic. I mean, when you say Winnebago, people instantly.
Oh, yeah. You know what I think of? I think of those really flat face, extremely square machines, but I don't know if that's true anymore, right?
That's the future.
Oh.
We'll stay here in the history.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
No. We'll stay here in history just for a second.
Okay.
Because looking into this, it's interesting if you trace it back with RVs, because it didn't by any means start with Mr. Hansen, as innovative as he was. Because if you think about it, when you go back this lifestyle of people living in mobile, you know, vehicles, you know, you could trace it back to even pioneer days, excuse me, and covered wagons.
Oh, very good point. Yeah. So the covered wagon trains were kind of like, you know, what we're talking about with RV camping right now. People headed off to who knows where, and they set up camp wherever they can find, right?
Yes, yeah. And a lot of times the motivations and certainly the technology differed, but the a lot of the day-to-day routines, I'm sure, were similar. You go during the day and you pull over at night.
Sure, you hook up the electricity, get your flat-screen TV out with your satellite dish. These are pioneers, right?
Yeah, these are the pioneers.
Yeah.
Because
that's
how they figured out where the Pacific was, their GPS, right?
Yeah, they were watching the Weather Channel to see what was coming in, you know, overnight.
Oh, Scott, stuff you missed in history class is going to be so disappointed in us.
Yeah, okay.
Right, so, but
that
then,
took that far enough.
Then we can even go back, well, maybe not back farther, but the you also remember the old gypsy wagons in horror movies and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, those are called Vardos, and it's almost a similar idea that we live in these mobile units. But here's an interesting little tidbit I thought you would enjoy. A lot of people nowadays associate those with very ancient practice or something, you know, but they're relatively recent.
Vardos are?
Uh-huh, yeah, okay. Around the 1800s from what I was looking into, 1800s in Europe. So the people, and I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation, the Roma or the Rom, I can't remember the correct way to say it.
Don't look at me.
Okay, all right, I'm not looking at you.
Yes, you are.
I'm looking at the microphone, I promise. But these people originally didn't start off with these wagons, so... We've seen this evolution. The RV's not really a new thing. And as we said, although the specifics of the technology have changed, the concept hasn't really. And I would argue, and maybe you can beat me on this one, but I would argue they still have a lot of the same pros and cons.
Pros and cons. I think there's a few that maybe there are a few cons now that maybe weren't around back then. Fuel cost has got to be number one.
Oh, touche.
Yeah, but yeah. But because I've read that these things are, you know, they're getting like six, maybe some are getting 4, 6, or 8 miles per gallon.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous. But then again, they hold 200 gallons of fuel. So the range, you know, or something like that. Let's say that they hold a ton of fuel, like a boat almost, you know, where you can take these long journeys safely, I guess. You have a good range. However, your consumption is really, really high. Now that, of course, they didn't have fuel to worry about.
Well, they had livestock.
Yeah, sure. They had to feed the horses and get them, oxen. They had to feed the oxen to keep them moving. But, yeah, I guess maintenance would still be a concern, right?
Yeah, okay.
I mean, now and then, right?
Yeah, that's definitely true.
What else have you got? I mean,
as far as cons?
Yeah, cons. Any other cons? Because I could think of one more, but that's about it.
Okay, first, I think it's not the best idea. This ties into maintenance and fuel, or I guess transportation power. The problem with living in one thing that moves around is, you know, not just that maintenance is necessary, but the maintenance can really sink you. Because if you live in a, if you live in a neighborhood where you know everybody, something happens to your house, you can ask your neighbors for help. If you live in an RV and something happens, you have to hope that somebody on the road will help you, unless you're in an RV park or something.
No, you rely on the kindness of strangers, I guess, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Perfect sense.
You're what do you got?
Well, pales in comparison to that, but I was thinking that, you know, today, now, there may be sites or places that you want to go that if you have a camper that's too large, it just won't fit. If you have decided to live in, you know, your RV, and you're traveling around and you'd like to stay in a certain spot, certain location, you may not be able to camp there. They may not permit you to be there because of, you know, low tree overhangs, power lines, whatever they have within the facility. You may have to find one that's nearby. You may have to settle.
Yeah.
You may have to, you know, decide that, you know, I can't go there. I'll go here today and stay overnight. And then find somewhere else in the morning.
You know, honestly, the biggest con to me is the space issues. Mm-hmm. I don't like, I know this sounds weird coming from someone who drives a land boat that is a Monte Carlo, but I would really prefer smaller vehicles. I go out of my way, you know, if I'm with a group of people, not to be the guy driving the van or the truck or whatever you have. So I just can't imagine. To me, the idea of retiring to drive a bus is that's how I equate it. And, you know, I don't mean to sound dismissive at all. It's awesome to have your car be the place where you live. You're on a never-ending road trip. But the fact that there are other cars on the road really bugs me.
Oh, let me tell you, I totally understand that. I'm a small car guy myself. Uh-huh. And if I get into something like a four-door sedan of some kind, that's huge to me. And trying to navigate a bus through city traffic or through, you know, what we sit in daily, you know, going home.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, you'd find yourself in that position at some point.
Yeah.
That would be difficult. Or driving through the mountains or trying to navigate, you know, some switchbacks on, you know, highway A1A or whatever.
Right.
It would be, or I should say on the Pacific coastline, that would be difficult. I mean, I can't imagine what it would be like trying to navigate. Plus, you know, a lot of times you're towing a vehicle, a car, along with that. And that's, you know, so that you have mobility when you get to wherever you're going. You know, you could park the van and then take that out to dinner or to, you know, local sites, wherever you're going to go. So, yeah, I think to me, might be a little difficult.
And also, a final point that I'd like to bring up, a lot of the really interesting landmarks in the U.S. don't allow motorized vehicles. So if you wanted to go see parts of Yellowstone or something like that, you would have to, oddly enough, park the vehicle you were in.
Your home.
Yeah, park your home, exactly, and then go to the visitor center and, you know, rent a burro?
I don't know. Like, yeah, I guess you would have to do that. That gets back to the, you know, the vehicle being too large for some places to go. Now, if you have a smaller vehicle, you might be okay. Mm-hmm. You can get close enough to hike just like anybody else would, I guess. But you're right. You would be restricted in some circumstances for getting, you know, from getting to interesting places.
Yeah, so what about the pros? I feel like we've been pretty hard on RVs.
Yeah, I know. You know, the idea, they're pretty cool, really. I mean, it's a neat vehicle.
Yeah.
And I like the concept. What I think is maybe the biggest pro, and I'll be honest, it's the only pro that I have here, is the freedom. Mm. Just the outright freedom that you have to go and do whatever you want to do. You're not tied to one place. You don't have, you know, one home to go to in a certain state and a certain location. Mm-hmm. Not that that's bad. I'm just saying that, you know, with an RV, you're free to go where you want to.
That's true. The horizon.
What about you? Do you have any?
I do. I have one pro. I don't know how much it applies, mm-hmm. but I think it's a good point. For some professions, it's actually better to live in an RV than it is to live in a house. Now hear me out.
Okay. I'm dying to know. What are you talking about?
Okay. I've only got one, and I will be completely honest with you. It may almost be cheating, but for travel writers, an RV is better than living in a house because, you know, you will always be at work even if you're just relaxing. And more with the evolution of internet technology, we're seeing people who work from a laptop, you know, in Starbucks across the United States. Mm-hmm. And for people who need to be mobile, perhaps they're also traveling professionals, engineers, things of that nature, then it really helps not to be tied down in one place. If there is an RV that comes out that has something close to fuel efficiency, which doesn't happen now. I mean, four to eight miles per gallon or so?
It's a wild guess on my part because I remember hearing numbers somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, 6 miles per gallon, eight miles per gallon for the big ones.
Yeah.
And it may be a little bit higher now. I'm not sure. But you're talking about a 43-foot long, mm-hmm. 400-horsepower diesel engine.
It's a lot of weight, too.
And this thing is shaped like a bus. It's flat. It's mm-hmm. heavy. It's climbing mountains. You know, you're expecting a lot of this thing. Or you're even towing another vehicle behind it. I just don't see it getting great gas mileage ever.
Right. It's the, I mean, that's, we're talking Hummer gas mile numbers right there.
Yes, gas mileage, right. Numbers. Yeah. Not to pick on Hummer, but you're right. Yeah that's it's extremely low, and it has a lot to do with the, you know, we've talked about it so many times, the weight, mm-hmm. the shape and the size of the engine, and just, you know, what you're towing behind it, what you're expecting of the vehicle. And they do a good job at what they're built for.
Sure.
And if you were to lighten them somehow, you know, make a an ultralight RV.
Wow.
I don't know how that would work. I don't know if that would work, because you probably would, you know, with the surface that you're talking about, you'd probably be blown over on the highway, you know, if a strong wind came left to right or right to left. I've heard of empty trucks being blown over before, so if you make it too light, you know, there's a danger there too.
Definitely. Well, that, you know what, that segues very nicely into one of the last points we should probably talk about, and you really just touched on it here, the future of RVs. Because I came into this podcast, I really wanted one. I'd done a little bit of research, mainly into my budget, which cannot afford one right now, but also into the problems. In defense of Hummer, you know, people who purchase Hummers really are looking for a power vehicle more than they're looking for a place to live.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, they're not going to live in a Hummer, I would think.
Right, right. Yeah. Probably not. And so, as a result, you know, I think that manufacturers of Hummers, manufacturers of RVs, are aiming toward two different markets. But, man, Scott, I just can't get an RV unless they're, I don't know, solar-powered, hydro-powered.
Hydro-powered, how good idea.
I don't know.
A small nuclear reactor.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'll be honest, I thought about this question, this, because we talked about this beforehand. Yeah. Is there a future for RVs? And I think that there still is. But then again, I'm finding myself flip-flopping on this back and forth.
Okay.
And the big reason that I'm saying no is that they're pretty darn expensive.
Sure.
Well, then again, houses are expensive too. And, you know, high-end vehicle. If you're talking about selling your house and buying this, you know, the trade-off might be exactly equal. It might be, you know, a wash. Mm-hmm. But you're talking, you know, some of these things they exceed $200,000 for the
Class A's,
the big ones, the Class A, brand new, even used. Some of the used ones are $220,000.
Wow.
You can get a Class A that's smaller, you know, like maybe a 30-foot Class A for $60,000 or something like that. You know, that range. One that, you know, maybe already has 45,000 miles on it or something like that, you know, used vehicle, and also is about 7 or 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
You know, so there's a little bit of wear and tear. But, you know, they're expensive. The fuel cost is high. But then now the positive side, we talked about the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, people, if you're talking about rental, I think people would rent RVs and go on vacation, because that's a relatively cheap vacation for somebody. You know, maybe it may cost them less than going to a resort.
Good point.
And it
yeah.
gives a family the opportunity to spend time together on the road, there, you know, to and from the vacation destination. And when you're there, of course, you know, you're going to be close to the family, I guess. Everybody's going to be in the same vehicle.
Sure. Which could be good and bad.
Yeah, it could be either way, I guess. And I don't know. I just think, you know, I'm kind of back and forth. Like I said, you know, there's good and bad about this thing.
I've got one. This is probably not going to make you up your mind, but it's going to flip. It's a flip to your flop, perhaps.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay? Here we go. Yes, the gas is expensive, right? Mm-hmm. And the entry costs, I agree, are enormous. However, as you said, the entry costs are comparable to those of a house for a Class A vehicle. And consider that the gas costs are somewhat offset by not needing to pay utilities and rent. Wait, no, rent's not fair, because the payment on your RV note becomes your rent, right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, because you're paying, you would be paying much like you would a mortgage.
Yeah,
yeah, it would be comparable to that. I mean, if you're talking about a $220,000 RV,
yeah, that's hefty.
Most people are not going to pay cash for that up front. They're going to put a down payment on this and pay. For, I would guess, you know, I'm guessing,
sure.
20 years?
Yeah, I
would
see
think.
That.
I mean, to make it affordable, if you want to, you know, really go at it all out, I guess you would, you know, make that a much smaller payment, or a bigger payment, smaller time frame.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to buy an RV
we're talking extreme. You could
sure.
probably get a cheaper one.
So, okay, I don't know, man. What do you think? I think we've taken a pretty good look at RVs.
Yeah, I think we covered it pretty good.
You know what, though? we could always ask for a listener mail about living in an RV, perhaps.
Well, sure, yeah, because you and I, we don't have any experience of actually doing it. We've just read about it, kind of investigated a little bit, and have our theories, but it's always good to hear from somebody that actually does this, or you know, maybe even if it's just a weekend, not necessarily somebody who lives full-time in an RV, but you know, that'd be nice to hear from, too.
Yeah, that's a great point. So to our listeners, thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoyed it. If you have lived in an RV or spent some time in one, please do send us an email telling us about it at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.